Hayek and his brother Jackson. So the last time we did the book of Acts, we were in Acts chapter 12, and we did Acts chapter 12 verses 1 through 11. So what we talked about, how Herod, verse 1 tells Herod stretched his hand against the congregations, as it says in verse 1, and he vexed. That means he harassed, he troubled, he wanted to persecute the congregation of Elohim, and they killed James, the brother of John, but John the apostle. He killed him, murdered him, because he's self-seeking, seeking his own glory, his own. He's trying to secure his position. He's like another King Saul in a way. So when he saw that it pleased those of Judaism, he proceeded further, and he took Peter. And this was happening during the days of unleavened bread. But just as it was in the case of when they arrested Messiah, those who wanted Messiah dead, as I said, did not want this done during the feast day, during the unleavened bread, but wanted to wait until after the feast to put Messiah to death, which is how it happened in the Gospels when we read carefully, is the same thing that happened here. Then were the days of unleavened bread. And he caught Peter and wanted to bring him out to put him to death after Passover. He wanted the full 7 days because that would have caused an uproar. You don't do that type of thing during the holy days. Even they wouldn't do it because they're self-seeking. They're trying to gain the approval of the people more than the approval of Elohim. So whatever would be harmful to their credit, they would not do. So Peter was in prison, but the scriptures told us that the congregation was praying in much prayer, but prayer was made without ceasing for Peter. They didn't say, "Oh, well, Peter, he's the apostle. If he kills him, he's going to be in a better place." They didn't say that. They wanted Peter with them, so they prayed to have Peter with them. They prayed with singleness of heart. They did not allow that type of thinking to interfere with their faith. So if we allow that type of thinking to interfere with our faith, I've heard in Protestant circles and other circles where when someone is sick, for instance, people don't pray with a full heart because, well, they'll say if that person dies, well, then, they're a believer. They're going to be at a better place. They're going to be with the Father. So it's a good thing. It's never a good thing, really, necessarily. There's a time for everything. And unless Elohim tells us so, we should not pray like that. We must pray with the whole heart for the restoration and freedom of people. Don't fall for that type of thinking, because that type of thinking will limit our faith. We need to pray fervently for the things that we want, whether it's a matter of health, whether it's a matter of life, whatever. We need to pray fervently without ceasing until the time is past. Until it happens or the time is past. Okay? We know two strong examples of this. When David, King David, when his first son through Bathsheba, through sin, was dying, he prayed, he fasted, he didn't rise up. But then when the time was past, when the child, because he was praying that the child should not die. And when he saw the will of Elohim, even though Elohim already told him that's what was going to happen, but he had hoped that Elohim would have changed his mind. But he did not. And when he saw that Elohim did not change his mind, he got up, bathed himself, and went about eating. And the people were stunned by his behavior. Right? They said, "Oh, what is this? When he was sick, you were praying for him. Now, mourning, now that he's dead, you've washed yourself and you're in a sense eating." It doesn't make. Then he said, "What's the point if he's already dead?" And we know our Messiah Yeshua, when he came in covenant to die for us. But when he saw and knew exactly the evils going to befall his flesh, he prayed three times if that would be taken away from him. And I've said in the past, that's the first time Messiah ever said, "If you will." Why? Because he was praying for something that was not in the covenant in which he came. Because he came to die. That's what he came to earth for. But at this point in his life, because of the terror, he prayed, is there another way? Can it be done? And that was the only time he said if. And when he realized after the third time it didn't happen, it's not that we should stop praying at the third time. No, when it happens, when we see the prayer is not answered, we may as well stop. because when he saw that the guards and the soldiers were coming, he said, wake up, the time has come, right? He told the disciples. So we need to learn about these things in praying, because we should be praying without ceasing for the things we need in righteousness. As long as we're living right, and living right, living a repentant life is important. We cannot live a compromised life. If we live a compromised life, we don't even need to pray, to be very honest with you. The prayer we need to pray if we're living a compromised life is that we should be given the strength to repent and overcome. When we've done repenting and overcoming, then we can come and pray and have expectation to receive the things that we've asked for. But going back to the text, they much prayer without ceasing of the congregation of Elohim. And that same night, when they were planning to bring him out, the feast had ended. They were planning, the last day of unleavened bread had ended, because it was now evening, because the feast ends by evening. The last day of the feast ends by evening, so they're taking him out at night. And the same day, the angel sets Peter free. But we see in verse 11, where we left off, that, and when Peter has come to himself, he said, now I know of a surety that the Eternal had sent his angel and have delivered me out of the hand of Herod and from all the expectation of the people of the Yehudim. So you see, this great miracle was done on behalf of the Apostle Peter. Even he wasn't certain of it until he regained his full sense to see that Elohim has indeed delivered him. He wasn't sure if it was a dream or not. Now I know of surety that the Eternal have sent his angel and have delivered me out of the hand of Herod and from all the expectation of the people of the Yehudim. So these things happen. Sometimes we could be praying and deliverance already came and we don't know it. That's not an unusual thing for you to pray, to start praying for something, and unknown to you, Elohim has answered the prayer and you're still praying. But then he'll let you know that your prayer was answered. So let's continue with verse 12 to verse 19. So, and when he had, that is Peter, and when he had considered the thing, he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark, where many were gathered together praying. And as Peter knocked at the door of the gate, a damsel came to hearken named Rhoda. And when she knew Peter's voice, she opened not the gate for gladness, but ran in and told how Peter stood before the gate. And they said unto her, thou art mad. But she constantly affirmed that it was even so. Then said they, it is his angel. But Peter continued knocking. And when they had opened and saw him, they were astonished. But he beckoning unto them with the hand to hold their peace, declared unto them how the Eternal had brought him out of the prison. And he said, go, show these things unto Jacob, unto James, and to the brethren. And he departed and went into another place. Now as soon as it was day, there was no small stir among the soldiers, what has become of Peter. And when Herod had sought for him and found him not, he examined the keepers and commanded that they should be put to death. And he went down from Judea and Caesarea and there abode. Okay, let's go back. Okay, so we saw how Peter, in verse 11, was amazed at his own deliverance. Let me just back up. Why does the scriptures contain this type of information? You know, Peter was surprised. Look at the train of inspiration of the type of information you're being given here. The disciples were praying. Peter was set free. Peter wasn't even sure of his freedom until he came to his full senses. And here a similar thing happened. Peter comes to the house of the believers where he was staying before. They were praying for something. They were praying for that deliverance and yet could not come to grips that their prayer was answered. It is because these are expectations, things that we can experience and that we need to be aware of. They're important. They are important things tied to our faith. It's telling us that there is nothing hard for Elohim. It's telling us there's nothing that we should not expect about the goodness of Elohim. It's telling us that when we are in trouble, we should not shrug the shoulders and says, well, that's how life is. I'm supposed to suffer. That's not how we're supposed to think. We're supposed to pray with the expectation. Unless Yeshua, your Savior, has put you on this earth and given you a covenant and told you specifically you need to suffer, don't say that about yourself, because that's not how it works. We have to understand that Elohim came to set us free in every way. If we're sick, if we're in trouble, as long as we're living obediently to Him, we need to cry out for His help and have the expectation of Him delivering us. Not expectation as if we deserve it, but expectation of His steadfast love, as Abraham had, for expectation for his son Isaac when he sent his servant to find a wife for his son, and also his servant on his journey to find Isaac a wife had the same attitude. Show me your steadfast love. And we need to have that type of attitude. So we need to have the right expectation. This is kind of what this is about. When we pray, we need to have the right expectation. Remember, these believers who were praying were not seasoned. They were not fully accustomed to the ways of Elohim. That's part of the reason. These particular believers were not accustomed to having the faith that they should have, obviously, because they didn't. They were not expecting these things. But we have the writings for us preserved so we could have these expectations. So then he came to the house of Miriam, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark. A little stop here. Notice John, whose surname was Mark. So it shows you again how names are translated. Yohanan, or John, Yohanan, that's translated as John, is a Hebrew word. Mark is a foreign word. I believe it's Greek, right? So it's to show you how we're not to have this idea that our names need to be said in Hebrew. Because you will find all throughout the scriptures where names, Hebrew names, are translated into the foreign name of the foreign language. So we have to not be deceived by this divisive idea that you have to say things in Hebrew. That people forget that all the languages were created by Elohim. There is nothing evil that comes from Elohim. People do evil things with what Elohim creates. But Elohim does not create evil things. So Greek is a good thing. And so if someone says something in Greek, it's not a bad thing. We have to get that lie out of our heads. And it's dividing, and it's creating so much turmoil in the body of believers. It's good to say things in Hebrew, don't get me wrong, providing we know what we are saying. But it's not wrong to say something in Greek or in another language as long as it's good, because all languages were created by Elohim. So that's why you see that in the scriptures, and you see it in the Torah also, where a name is said in Hebrew and then it'll be said in the other language. So why are we, who are some thousands of years later, arguing with how the scriptures are written? That's not sound. And we're going to find ourselves void of faith and powerless because we will be focusing on things that don't matter and things that divide instead of the things that do matter and unify. And we won't have faith when we need it. So we have to stop with the words and all of this stuff. Again, it's good to speak in Hebrew. Don't misunderstand me. But it's not wrong to say something in Greek. It's not wrong to say a Greek name. And we will see more of that in the scriptures as we read. But let's continue. So John, whose surname was Mark, where many were gathered together praying. And Peter, also called Kepha, right? Peter, Kepha, Peter, Simon. We see that in the scriptures. There's a reason why Elohim does that, is so that those who are wise and seeking the truth can see the truth and not be misled by those who are working after their own self-zeal. Instead of for the zeal of Elohim, they're working for their self-zeal. They like something. Maybe they're crazy about Hebrew things, Hebraic things. And then they want everyone to speak in Hebrew because why? Because they like it. Has nothing to do with really the love of Elohim, because Elohim doesn't do that. So why should we do it? So Peter knocked at the door of the gate, and a damsel hearkened named Rhoda. Isn't that interesting how the name, do you notice how the female names in the New Covenant scriptures are said often? very often, but when we look in the Masoretic texts handed down to us by the Masoretes, you hardly see a name of a woman. But that's not so in the scriptures, even in the Old Covenant scriptures. It's how the Masoretes handed it down. That's, you know, so be careful on how we understand the scriptures. You notice Rhoda, remember Tabitha, remember Dorcas. Remember how their names were mentioned? And if you look in the version of the Masoretic text that we have, you hardly see women's names mentioned. But that's not so really in the way the scriptures were written originally. But let's continue. She opened the gate for gladness, but ran in and told how Peter stood outside the gate. So here she is. What's her role? She's reporting. She's not studying. Do you think what she did here was important? It's very, very important. Remember when Messiah rose from the dead? Who were the first to see him risen? Was it the men or the women? It was the women. Why did Elohim do that? Because Elohim wants the women to have a role that no one can talk against. So he made sure they saw him and they are reporting. It's not prophetic, but Elohim will give the righteous women things that no human being can speak against. And that's why I encourage the women of the congregation to be very careful, to be very careful and be circumspect and everything. Elohim will reveal things to you that no one can ever talk about. Men can study and teach speak through their teachings, through their studies, and men prophecy too. But women, especially prophecy, women, especially by hands-on experience, that cannot be talked against or refuted by anyone. And this is why Rhoda, just like those who first saw Yeshua rise from the dead, she is the one who goes to the door. And she's a damsel, a young damsel. She's a virgin. So she came and she went and she told them. But the others didn't believe. He said, "You are mad." That's extreme, right? You're mad. But she constantly affirmed that it was even so. She had seen the work of Elohim and she's testifying. She's testifying. She's giving testimony to what she has seen. She's not studying. She's not reading a book. She's giving testimony to the revelation of Elohim to her. Because none of the others believe and none of the others were moved by the Spirit to go to the door. Elohim does things in wonderful ways. Then they try to reason with her. Oh, you probably saw an angel or a likeness of her. When the word angel here in context, yes, it's the same word angel, but it doesn't mean an angel from above. But if they met angel, please open the door, let the angel come in, right? So that's not what they mean. It's like, oh, you're seeing something that looks like him, but it's not him. That's what's implied here. So verse 16, but Peter continued knocking. He continued knocking. And when they had opened, they saw and were astonished. Oh my goodness. Even after she told them, I hope they apologized to her, right? They were astonished. And he beckoning unto them with the hand, told them, calm down, hold your peace. And he told them everything that happened and how Elohim had set him free from the prison. Then he tells them, go show those things unto James and to the brethren. And he departed and went into another place. Important things here. This Peter was set by Yeshua himself to be as a rock on which the things of congregations would work, would be done on earth. Yes, Yeshua is the true rock, but Peter, little stone, was the one through which he will organize all things. And proof of it is he says, Peter, when you are converted, strengthen your brethren. And when he was risen from the dead, he said, Peter, do you love me? Feed my sheep. Now, I'm saying this because there are several people, and it might seem like a little thing, but these are important things to know. Because no one who has Elohim's spirit will make this kind of error. There are a group of people, they're claiming they know everything. They study so much, yet they're trying to say Jacob was the head over all the believers. And that is a grave error, and that is not true. James was the bishop of the congregation in Jerusalem. What happens is they've done a circular reasoning. Because today, if you're a bishop or a pastor, you're in charge of everything. Is that from the scriptures? No, it's not. Those are man-made traditions. So they're thinking in a man, through man-made tradition, and because James was the bishop of the congregation in Jerusalem, or the elder in the congregation of Israel of Jerusalem, they thought they were teaching that James somehow is above Peter and above everybody else, which is not true at all. And just think of it. Why would Messiah ever put James to be such? Did we read, was James other apostles did? Was he an apostle? No, he was not. It is the apostles who are, if you're going to put it highest level, the apostles are of the highest level in the congregations of Elohim. It is the apostles who first receive instruction by the Spirit and then distribute that instruction to the bishops. That's how that works. And you, when we saw that in the book of Revelation chapter 1, when the Father gave his Son a message for the congregations, then Messiah gave the message to his angel, and the angel gave the message to John, and John gave the message to the seven congregations, heads of the congregations. So why is that people that are saying James, it was the head of the congregation, they also have a whole bunch of other false beliefs. So that's why I point that out. So you, no one who's going to teach who has Elohim's spirit, Elohim does not allow them to make that type of mistake. I hope you understand why he doesn't. He doesn't allow them to make that type of mistake. And so that's one of the ways you can discern who knows who you should listen to, not listen to. Okay? And so if your brother or sister is teaching error, you know, brother, he might be a brother or sister, but that brother is not ordained by Elohim to teach. Elohim does not make mistakes. He chooses somebody to teach, that person will not make a mistake. Continue. So, like Peter says here, go show these things unto James and to the brethren. And he what? Departed. That's to show he has a special mission. He departed because he has things to do. He's the one that Messiah was working carefully with to manage the things of the congregations. James was in an administrative role. And you even see that in the book of Clement's account with his journeys with Peter. When Peter did all the preaching and all the teachings, he told them, send this to James and tell him to safeguard them and not to share them with anyone common, but only to those who are proven, who are first tested and proven faithful. Then they could those things. It's very interesting things and how that works. So let me finish quickly with this so we could stop and allow you time to share. So go show these things unto James and to the brethren. And he departed and went to another place. Now, as soon as it was day, there was no small stir among the soldiers as to what has become of Peter. I feel sorry for the soldiers. So Herod had sought for him and found him not. And he examined the keepers, questioning them. Could have been by torture, who knows. And then he commanded them to be put to death. He was merciless. And he went down from Judea to common said Caesarea, but it's really Caesarea, and there abode. All right, so who went down to Caesarea? We'll see clearly, Peter or was it Herod next time around? Okay, but we know that in verse 17, Peter did not stay with the brethren, but he departed and went into another place. But here in verse 19, it talked about Herod, the last sentence says, and he went down from Judea to Caesarea and their abode. All right. So thank you, dear brethren, for listening. I hope somehow the words I've shared has stimulated your thinking. And as I hope that Elohim has showed you things that maybe I didn't see as we read.